Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
All right. Happy Friday. Joe Zepecki, you look confused already. What's going on? Oh, you cannot... Joe cannot hear on... Okay. Well, I'm back. Thank you for, handling the ship yesterday, Steve.
You say ship?
Ship.
Okay.
Ship with a P.
Either one would have fit. Yeah, thanks. I had a blast yesterday, but you were missed. I had...
The text line blowing up. You're like, oh, man.
It was blowing up, but
the show's not the same without Krista.
I didn't get a lot of those, but... It's only a matter of time, really.
All right. Well, it is Friday. We already revealed Joe Zepecki in the studio. Hopefully you can hear us now. And then Bill McCosh, can you hear us? Because you are on the phone.
I can hear you live and well from Minneapolis.
How is the weather? Was there a storm there last night?
Bad storm. It's going to be like 59 degrees here. We're back to early spring.
All right. Well,
cloudy and dark.
We have a packed show today. We have a lot of stuff that we didn't got to get to. There's a lot of stuff we're not even going to get to. There was a lot of news this week, and I think some of my topics got the chopping block. But it feels like the first thing we got to start with is the status of this big, beautiful bill. Do we want to start with what's in it, or do we want to start with the likelihood of it actually getting passed?
I feel like Bill could tell us where this is at because he's plugged in. Bill, where's this at?
So it's gotten out of one committee. The House Ways and Means Committee has advanced the bill. It's still got to go through the Budget Committee. I think that markup is today. Speaker Mike Johnson says he wants to get it on the floor sometime next week and pass it. And I think we all know that next Friday is a holiday weekend Friday for Memorial Day. So this will be Mike Johnson's biggest test as speaker. Can they actually deliver on the promises that Trump ran on, all of which are contained in this big, beautiful bill? And if they can't, it's going to be a very, very rough summer. I think for these Republicans going home, they're going to get much more blowback from Republican voters or Trump voters than they're going to get from Democrats. I don't think they have any idea what they're potentially walking into if they do not pass this bill.
Joe, would Democrats call this the huge, horrific bill?
We'll take that out for a spin in the focus groups. It's not about the promises Donald Trump is keeping. It's about the ones he's breaking. He said that he would not cut Medicaid, that he would leave that program alone. And the latest CBO estimate is that 20 million Americans will lose health coverage. You know what that does, folks? It makes your health care cost more. Because just because the funding goes away doesn't mean the needs go away. It means that the needs become more expensive to address in emergency rooms. This was supposed to be the president who was going to be about American homegrown energy, and instead they're going to phase out tax credits that are turbocharging American homegrown independent energy sources like wind and solar. And so that's some of the problematic stuff that's in the bill. And the bigger challenge is they're nowhere near a deal with even within the Republican conference. They still haven't figured out the SALT deduction. Mm-hmm. You've got some Republican members in vulnerable districts who are very nervous about these Medicaid cuts. And you have folks like Senator Josh Hawley who are saying, no way.
We're not doing about this. It in the New York
right.
Times.
And so even if, and I am very skeptical that the House version passes before Memorial Day. But even if it does, the Senate version is going to be very different. And then there would have to be a conference. So this is just the first of at least three steps here. And the fact that they are having this degree of difficulty in just getting the House in order does not bode well for this getting done by the end of summer.
Bill, what do you make of Senator Ron Johnson's comments? I think we have a little bit of audio that we'll try to play at some point here. But I mean, he's come out and said, look, this is just adding to our federal deficit, that we cannot afford to keep doing this.
I think Joe is right about the process. There's going to be three steps to this. The House will pass their version. The Senate will pass their version. And both will be led by Republicans. Make no question about that. And then there'll have to be a conference. My guess is the versions will be dramatically different. There are more fiscal hawks, I would argue, in the Senate, like Ron Johnson, who want to see a real reduction in the deficit. I'm not sure they're going to see a major reduction in the deficit. I agree with him on that point. I mean, that's certainly where we ought to be striving towards. But with a slim margin in the House, it's going to be difficult to get as much progress as he's looking for in one bill. I'd play the long game if I were Senator Johnson. Let's get as much as we can get in this bill and live to fight another day on the second reconciliation later this year.
If they can't come to some agreement, House and Senate, get positive votes for Republicans, what happens? What's the change that happens to actually get something done at some point this year?
Oh, they'll get an agreement. It Joe's a fair point. He's probably going to win the bet that this doesn't get done by the 4th of July, but they'll get an agreement. You might remember that the former president Biden's infrastructure bill almost died, and it might have been the end of his presidency had it died, but they found a way to get the votes to get it done. I think Mike Johnson and John Thune, the Senate Majority Leader, understand that failure is not an option for them. I had a very high-ranking Republican say to me at an event this week, and it was a super point. He said he was waiting for someone to stand up on the House floor and give an Act 10 speech. And I said, what do you mean by that? He says, well, I'm waiting for, a courageous Republican to say, I'm willing to potentially lose my seat and this majority to put the country on the right track. We need more Republicans like that in Congress right now that are a little less worried about their own seat and their own reelection and a little more worried about doing what's right.
More? How about any bill?
I was going to say, what is the right track? Which right track are we talking about?
Move the president's agenda forward. 77 million people supported it.
And this is where they're falling short, though. We are 120 days into President Trump's term, and he has signed 5 laws. Right? 5 pieces of legislation that have actually gone through regular order. And other than the Lake and Riley Act, I can't even tell you what the other 4 are. I mean,
I think they're the fewest in 50 years.
Right.
Maybe 60.
He's got 6 money making schemes for himself, which is more than he has bills he signed into law. So when the longer this goes on, the more you see the breakdown of the usual order and the more that Trump is going to try to do by executive order or fiat, which Bill has said over and over again, that means they're impermanent by design. And so you're just going to continue to see chaos and uncertainty. And that's not healthy for the economy or for America.
All right. Well, speaking of money making schemes, when we come back, let's talk about the Middle East trip and the big, beautiful plane that might be coming to be Trump Force One. Stay with us on Point Taken.
Can you see yourself voting for this big, beautiful bill at all?
Not in the current structure, no. Yeah, I refuse to vote for something that's going to actually increase the deficits, exacerbate the problem from the current situation. Again, we shouldn't be talking about this right now. We should have been doing all the work, like I say, multi-step process. We'd already have the border funding, we'd have defense, we'd have $850 billion of real savings banked already.
That is the aforementioned Ron Johnson, senator from Wisconsin, saying on the current format, which is what Bill basically said, he would not support it. I'll give him one thing. He's consistent on the federal deficits. The first time I ever met him, got more than a dozen years ago, he was talking about that issue, and it's risen significantly since. And this bill, this big, beautiful bill, as it's been described by some people, adds to the deficit significantly. So let me just see where this goes. All right. The President of the United States, while all that's happening here, has been touring the Middle East. Lavish, opulent receptions. Getting a free plane of a $400 million jets that we're going to make into the next Air Force One if he gets his
plane. No, we're not.
We're not going to?
Here's the thing. Like, this plane has been on the market since 2020.
That's what I just learned.
It's actually hilarious.
It's an unwanted plane.
Yeah, nobody wants it. And the notion that this is going to be used as Air Force One is a joke.
Because wouldn't it cost like $600 million to actually refurbish to be at the level it needs to be to be safe?
Is like the most technologically advanced thing in the world. The amount of like defensive measures that are built in, its ability to stay airborne in perpetuity.
But also like during a nuclear war, right? Like if that becomes the command center if there's nuclear war.
I already know what you guys are going to say. I want to hear what Bill has to say about this. Bill, what do you think?
So, listen, let's talk about the trip. The trip was phenomanal.
Bill doesn't want to talk about the plane? That's weird.
Oh, no, we're going to get to the plane. And I'm actually going to share your view on that. But the trip started with the release of Edon Alexander, who had been a hostage since October 7th of 2 years ago. And he's the last American living hostage released. And we didn't have to give pallets of cash or release other, you know, bad people. You know, we negotiated that deal and got that guy released. That was how the trip started. And then it continued with $2 billion of additional investments, trillion, not billion, from Middle Eastern countries, including Saudi Arabia, the Arab Emirates, and Qatar. On the plane itself, I don't think the president should take that plane, even though it's going to the Department of Defense or wherever it's going. It doesn't look right. I think it's a bad optics for him. I understand that it may be legal, and he's defended it. I originally thought it was a joke. James Wigderson and I had some argument offline about that, and I said that's not a true story. It turns out it was a true story, but I don't think that the president should take the plane. I think it's very, very bad optics. I think what he should do is light a fire under Boeing. They got a contract, your listeners should know this, to build two new Air Force Ones in 2019. It's 2025. We are 6 years past the letting of that contract, which is a funny term for awarding of the contract. We still have no planes, and they might be 3 years out. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He just brought back $160 billion in business for Boeing from Saudi Arabia alone. They should make this a priority and finish the two planes they were given the contract for 6 years ago.
Yeah, some poor leadership at Boeing, starting with Dave Calhoun and others who have led that company since. The other thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on, Bill, are the sort of the change in attitude breaking the ice with the country of Syria. What do you make of that?
Well, we got to try something different. The things we've been doing for, you know, most of my adult life haven't worked in the Middle East. And I think we got a glimpse of the Trump doctrine. And I know Joe and I are going to vehemently disagree with on this. I mean, what he talked about in Saudi Arabia on the first day of the trip was world peace, peace for peace. We're done with endless wars. We're done with nation building. We're going to use our might, our strength, our power, and our economic might to bring peace across the globe. I'm for that. I think that's a big part of what got Trump elected in November. We're done with these forever wars, and there are a lot of Republicans in Congress and probably even listening to the show who's still like that model. It never worked. It didn't work when Bush did it, Bush 41. It didn't work when Bush 43 did it. You know, Trump is trying something different. I give him credit. So far, the response has been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, we're waving the white flag. I mean, he's calling
the
Houthis the, you know, tough hombres and walking away from, remember the Signal Gate whole scale? That was about launching airstrikes against the Houthis who were targeting American installations and military personnel. He's standing next to and talking about how handsome people are who have been funding jihadi efforts. He is making deals with governments who have supported financially these protests that your party pretends to be pissed off about, but apparently you know that only extends to college students here on a visa who write an op-ed they disagree with, and kids who are exercising their constitutionally protected right to free speech. But the people who are funding that, we got no problem standing next to them, posing for holy pictures and taking a $440 million bribe. Give me a break. Of course we want peace, Bill, but you can't just be like, oh, cool, you guys gave me a plane, I guess we're good now. This is nonsense.
It's sort of the same argument.
Is beyond nonsense. You're smarter than that. Come on.
It's sort of the same argument as when Trump signs, you know, aligns himself with Vladimir Putin. At some point, those of us who have been studying these things, looking at these stories over the years, talking about all these issues, understand that those aren't nice people.
Correct.
But you can't be friends with
them. And
some
this
of these
is just
people.
What it comes back to as far as, and this was, we saw in the first administration, as far as there is an admiration almost that it seems like Trump has for authoritarians.
Yeah.
Instead of, and the way that they run their countries. I mean, there were so many different sound bites this week as far as how much he likes these guys.
Right.
MBS,
who ordered the dismantling of a journalist.
It's such a shift as far as what our relationship is with people who have been our allies.
Yeah, what part of the Obama or Biden or even Bush doctrine on foreign policy worked? What part?
Well, let's look at it this way. The Iran deal, JCPOA.
Come on, Mr. P.
They still don't have a nuclear weapon, but they're closer now because Trump walked away from JCPOA the first time.
They're not going to get a nuclear weapon, and you know that.
All right, on that moment.
What part of those doctrines work? None of them.
Let's take a break.
We'll be back in just a moment. This is Point Taken. All right, everybody's taking a breath. We're going to move on to a more...
Bill did promise vehement disagreement in his defense.
I originally said violently, and then he amended
that. I did, because we're going to talk about Comey, so I wanted to.
Well, we are going to talk about Comey after the in the next half hour. But first, let's talk about a local story. The new MPS superintendent has been making some moves. I think most recently this week, there was another 31 administrative positions that she has axed from the central office. There's moves to get people who are in the central office to be in schools. There's people reapplying for their jobs. And, you know, I've never worked in a school. I haven't worked in any kind of administrative education system. But as far as not just coming in and having the status quo be her operating, coming into a new position, I think this is a good thing, although it doesn't seem like the teachers union is very happy about it.
So, big surprise there. Bill, this is a great start for the new superintendent.
Yeah, you and I are in agreement on that, Steve. I've been critical of MPS, and I think with good reason, for a long time about what goes on in the classroom and the poor performance of the students there for literally decades. I think this new superintendent, I have not met her yet. I give her huge props for what she's been able to do right out of the gate. She moved 40 teachers from the administration building, why they were ever there, I'm not sure, back into the classroom. A+ for that. Then she moved 30 support staff out of admin into the classroom or into the schools. A+ for that. Those are things that had to be done. I mean, the next phase is she's working on implementing the science of reading in MPS, which is critical. And by the way, it's state law, but MPS is one of the late adopters of all these things. When you have minority kids that are reading at less than 10% proficiency, that's unacceptable. It should be unacceptable to any listener to this program today, regardless of your political background, your race, your gender, any of that. It's unacceptable as a society. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt because I think her first two moves have been genius, long overdue, and will make a difference in student performance long term. Obviously, I was not surprised to see the teachers union fighting against it at the school board meeting the other night. I'm not sure what their argument could have possibly been, but stick with it, new superintendent. You're doing the right thing.
From the heat of disagreement to the heat of agreement, I think trust but verify. I mean, that she's off to a very good, strong start. You know, I hope this works. You know, there are no guarantees that it will. And the one thing that I would just one note of caution is when you're moving administrative staff out, you do have to make sure that reporting and requirements that you need to meet, which can lead to like financial problems, can be a thing. So is like this is a good start, but you also got to make sure the finances are tight.
All right, good start to the show. That much closer to the weekend, at least for me. I cannot wait till this weekend. Trust me. Brewers et al. Happy Friday, everybody. Yes, it is Friday. That means Bill McCoshin on the road, Joseph Pecky in studio. Bill, when are you coming back to us in studio? Do we know?
Next Friday.
All right.
We
in
have
a month.
We have a commitment. And I say that in jest because we appreciate you. You know, I know you're busy and you do a lot of things. The fact that you're still here for us, we appreciate that. All right, so this investigation now, because James Comey posted an Instagram picture of 8647. Was it spelled out in coins or shells? What was
shells?
Shells. Okay.
Shells on a beach. And it doesn't even seem like he. It's not like he made it.
No, he didn't.
Came across it.
He came across it. Now the president of the United States has interpreted that as kill Trump. So President 4786, as Joel was telling us during the break, essentially means nix or get rid of.
Like an 86 in a food order.
Food order. It's like for people who've worked in restaurants, that is nomenclature in restaurants to be like, oh, 86, the pork belly, because we're out of it.
I think it goes beyond restaurants, but I don't want to argue that point. Anyway, Trump said in an interview on Fox, Comey knew exactly what that meant. Bill, what do you make of that story?
So the listeners got to hear me pretty passionate 5 minutes ago, and Joe and I disagreeing on a topic, and that would be the extent of Joe and I's disagreements, the level it would rise to. It would never rise above that, right? I don't believe in political violence. I don't think the three of you believe in political violence in any way, shape, or form. And I also don't believe in promoting it. I think James Comey is a narcissist, full stop. But I also think he knows what 8647 meant. The notion that he would post that and say he found this cool, quote-unquote cool, arrangement on the beach is ridiculous. The guy was seeking attention for himself. He knew what it meant. He's the former director of the FBI. How could he not know what that meant? I mean, just a little bit of judgment. I mean, he confirmed for me again why Trump fired him. What an idiot. I mean, why would you do that? And my guess is the Secret Service has already been to his house today. Do I think he meant kill the president? I don't know. But it's a signal to people who are on the fringes that that's okay. If somebody like James Comey can say that, maybe it's okay. It's not okay. It's never okay for either side to do that. And if you have people on your fringe and both sides do, you got to find a way to measure them out or level them out that rather than firing them up.
Joe, before you jump in and say it doesn't mean anything or it's being over exaggerated or maybe the investigations by Homeland Security and Secret Service are just a waste of time, it's something he shouldn't do.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty stupid and pointless, but it's also someone's social media, and that sort of applies to almost everything that people put on social media.
So that makes it good?
But no, I just don't see the point.
Well, here's the thing. So if you Google image search 8647, which I just did to try to find what the shells look like. There is, you can order on Amazon.
And Etsy.
And Etsy, other Ranger 8647 retailers. Anti-Trump funny sweatshirt.
Right.
And the description says, what does 86 mean? It means to eject, bar, kick out, or impeach someone.
Yeah. For example, I got random stuff banging around this head, including that, the police response code for the killing of a law enforcement officer is 187. Right. And so you've heard in rap songs and hip hop music for years, lyrics about 187 on an undercover cop. So to me, that something like 187 is actually an indication of violence against a law enforcement officer. When I see 86, I don't jump to that is a call for political violence. And I think so. The question you then have to ask is, why are Trump and Trump supporters jumping to this must be what that means when for months this has been a thing on TikTok, when there is widely available commercial products merch that have this on it, where they love to play the victim and they love to target who they perceive as their political enemies by using the power of the state. And you just, James Comey was literally on the Cash Patel enemies list. So they are looking for any excuse or opportunity.
So why to give go it to him then?
James Comey should know better. But if this was not James Comey calling for the assassination of Donald Trump, come on.
I just think people got to be smarter.
Apology, he acknowledges he knew it was a political statement. So that in and of itself would say, why did he post it? What was he thinking?
Does he not get the right to free political speech in this country? Right? I mean, that's the thing. It's speech that is not
calling for violence. He's in a different category.
And
I don't know.
Anybody know if he has a new book coming out? Does he have another book coming out? Is that what's happening here?
Well, that might explain it.
I got to rib my buddy Bill here, though. We're going to go after James Comey for being a narcissist, but we're just going to continue to let Donald Trump off the hook.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Come on, man.
I knew
that
was coming. We're winning, brother. Hashtag winning. We're never going to get sick of winning.
Well, the next topic is another guy who hopes he will be winning in 2028, and he's
good
certainly
luck
buttoning some stuff up to... Joe looked at me and goes, who we're talking about? We were talking about the governor of California and some of his new policies. So stay with us on Point Taken. California Love. Welcome back to Point Taken. Steve Scafidi. I am Kristen Bry. And of course, it's Friday, so we are here with Joe Zepecki in the studio, and Bill McCoshin is on the phone. And California Governor Gavin Newsom has been toughening up some stances on a variety of issues. Most recently, he is now talking about having stricter spending when it comes to Medicaid for undocumented immigrants. He has also had a tougher stance recently on what cities should be doing with homeless encampments. And the question, of course, is raised, is this for a potential run, or is this because he's actually changed his mind and wants new policy when it comes to some of these social issues?
Joe, you're the Democrat. What do you think?
Sorry, I'm just over here trying to make a dinner reservation for my wife and I. Gavin Newsom's not going to be president.
That's what I feel like. But you think he's going to run?
Probably. This feels very Mitt Romney-ish to me. And what I mean by that is, so Mitt Romney was one type of Republican when he ran for and then governed the state of Massachusetts. And then in order to become the nominee of his party, he had to change who he was to fit the moment. And so when that happens, it becomes less about, are you aligning policy-wise, and more about, do people believe you are authentic and credible? And I think he always struggled with that. And these moves by Newsom are reminiscent of that to me, where he is trying to like change who he is politically in a way that I've never seen work in American politics.
So it couldn't be that maybe a Democrat who's the leader of a large state says, you know, maybe some of our ideas are outdated as far as Democratic policy, maybe we sort of move toward the middle a little bit. Maybe that's part of it.
Maybe that is part of it, but here's what I'd say. I would be more likely to believe that if you said that about Jared Polis, who knows that he's never going to be president of the United States and is governor of Colorado, for example, right? If Tony Evers were to try to do some of that, because Tony knows he's never going to be president of the United States. Gavin Newsom is someone who, from the time he was elected mayor of San Francisco, has been on a track and a path, and everyone has said, like, he's going to run for president someday, he's going to be president someday. And so I think at this moment in our politics, one of the worst things you can be is a politician. The only way out of that box is to be an authentic, credible, believable politician, and politicians who change their stripes don't do as well as those who remain committed to something, whether you agree with it or not, like, say, Bernie Sanders.
I was going to ask, who's your example?
Right, like, a lot of us may disagree with Sanders on some policy things. Others have come to embrace more of them, but, like, Bernie Sanders has been the same person throughout his political life, and it's why even though he doesn't look the part of a president or sound like one, he still has a passionate following. I don't know. Bill, tell me I'm wrong.
I can't. I agree with everything you said. I think it's authenticity is crucial for someone considering public office. I don't want to say a politician, because I think it's more likely the Democrats nominate someone who's not in politics in 2028 than somebody who is. And Newsom is not going to fill the left lane. There will be a Bernie Sanders 2.0, whether that's AOC or someone from the left wing of the party. They'll be in the primaries until the bitter end. But they'll ultimately, if they want to win, find somebody who's more in the center, and that's more likely to be somebody from the outside who's not currently in politics. I think Stephen A. Smith has a better chance of being their nominee than Gavin Newsom does.
I think one.
Who likes Stephen A. Smith? I don't know a single person who likes that man besides
voters
himself.
Will like that. He's authentic, and voters like that. Trump's proven that. But the thing that Newsom did this week actually goes back to something Joe said earlier, where we do disagree, and that is he's decided that illegals are no longer going to be eligible for Medicaid in California. The three states who have the most illegals on the Medicaid rolls, this was allowed under the Biden administration, are Illinois, California, and New York. 1.4 million of these people are going to, quote unquote, lose their coverage. Are illegals. They're not U.S. citizens. So, yes, that is going to happen as part of the big, beautiful bill. And Newsom's trying to get some credit for it when it's bankrupting their state, it's bankrupting Illinois, and it's causing huge financial burden in New York. He's the first one to figure that out.
I agree completely that he's flipped. But you guys forget history. Almost every major politician in this country on both sides has changed their mind on every major issue and policy question in the last 20 or 30 years. Like, what world are you living in?
What do you mean?
Pelosi, on immigration, there used to be Democrats were tough on immigration. Then they weren't. So, like, what world are you living in where people don't change their minds?
But as always, is it a bad thing to
change
your mind?
He's also 57
years
old.
Is it the motivation of why you're changing your mind that we're skeptical of versus, because, oh, I learned more information or this is working or not
since
working?
Since you asked, I'll give you, as we go to break, since you asked, it's a Democrat saying, you know what, maybe we're out of step with what the American people think. Maybe I should re-educate myself and reevaluate our policies. I'm not a Gavin Newsom fan. I've never voted
Gavin
for the guy.
Gavin 2028 sounds like Steve's on board.
But what are you guys talking about? He's 57 years old. You can't dismiss him as he's not going to be a factor. He's going to run for president. And in the crazy mixed up world of politics in this country, he's got as good a chance as anybody. Matter of fact, Taylor Swift probably has a good chance.
And my political analysis is he has far less of a chance than you think he does.
My goodness.
I'm with you on that, Joe.
I didn't think this was what was going to get Steve rolling. Holy cow.
He's 57 years old.
I love it.
The dude's got a lot of living left to do, God willing. All right, 1051, 620 WTMJ.
All right, well, this is going to be the political power 90 minutes because Joe and Bill are sticking around past the top of the hour news for another half hour. Lucky us. But this is my opportunity as a woman who
the
is
on, woman
the only woman on this show, but you know, there's not always a ton of women on political talk radio, and I don't know if you guys would choose this topic if I wasn't here, so I'm going to take the opportunity before we go to the break to let everyone know about this is some of the stories that we're going to keep hearing if we keep going down the path of abortion bans. In Atlanta, Georgia right now, there's a 30-year-old woman who is legally, she's dead. She's being kept alive because she's on life support because she is 9 weeks pregnant. Because the ban in Georgia right now, when it comes to abortions, said the medical staff at this hospital will not take her off life support despite her family's wishes because she is 9 weeks pregnant. Now, is the state paying for the medical bills to keep this woman alive? Absolutely not. It is makes me sick to my stomach that this is where we're at and this is what families have to go through. That this, and she's 9 weeks pregnant. This baby is not even close to viability. It's going to be at least two more months of her being on life support for this fetus to even have a chance. And even then, probably will never see, will never walk. And this is what we're doing. And I don't know. And Billy, I mean, I would love if you have a defense for this, if any of you have a defense for this, because this is horrific.
I agree with your conclusion. It doesn't make sense. As I read through the Georgia law, it appears to be an exception for the life of the mother after the 6 week. They have a 6 week ban, meaning you can have an abortion up through the first 6 weeks. A lot of women don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. I'm not a woman, but I do know that. So I'm not sure why that didn't kick in this instance. This was an outlier for sure. You try and draft legislation to include all potential contingencies, they clearly missed on this one because it doesn't make sense to me why this woman would be kept alive while she's still pregnant. She may or may not end up delivering that baby. It's nobody knows. I don't know if there's a case in history where someone has delivered it while they're brain dead. So I don't know. I think this is one that could be challenged in the courts and they would be allowed to let her pass peacefully. Doesn't make sense to me. I do support, and I have said it on the show many times, the Dobbs decision that allows states to have their own rules. I think that is how it should be. I think each state should be able to define their direction like they do on all criminal cases. Not every state has the death penalty. Wisconsin does not. Right now, Wisconsin has a 20-week ban based on previous court decisions. The current Supreme Court may reduce that. They may choose to reduce that substantially over the next 6 weeks. We'll see.
All right. Well, I have things to say, but we got to go to the top of our news. We will have more with Joe and Bill and Steve and me, Kristen, on Point Taken on WTMJ.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
We're here, as is Joseph Pecky, Bill McCashin on the road. All right, I'm going to start with you, Joseph Pecky. So the Supreme Court yesterday, historic arguments, 14th Amendment, having to do with the question of birthright citizenship. But beyond that, there's questions of presidential power and also this fairly recent development of lower courts issuing nationwide injunctions against some of the things that are coming out of the Oval Office in the White House. You can touch on any or all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say our judicial system is not up for reform, right? I think there are things that we should do to make the judicial system work better, specifically on the birthright citizenship case. The right can jump up and down and say, oh, Amy Coney Barrett is a Brian Hagedorn. We didn't know what we were getting. Nonsense. The text of the Constitution is clear. This is a ridiculous exercise that I believe the U.S. Supreme Court will decide right in the end, which is that if you are born here, you are an American citizen. End of story.
How about the power of the president?
I mean, they've given the president way more power than any president ought to have, including basically total immunity.
And will they give him even more power?
My hope is they will rein that in. Over time, when you look at the sweep of history, the court, you know, expands and retracts and changes its take on things. We need to rein in the power of the executive, get back to three separate and co-equal branches of
Mr. power. Bill McCashin, what do you think?
Oh, none of us are attorneys. Yesterday on my drive to Minneapolis were a lot of legal experts who thought that this wasn't Trump's strongest case before the Supreme Court on the birthright citizenship. What he's trying to do is say, you know, the original decision was back in the late 1800s, more than 130 years ago, and it had to do with slaves, making sure that slaves' children were considered U.S. children, citizens of the United States. And now fast forward to it was never contemplated that we'd be talking about illegals' kids, but here we are 130 years later. I've never thought that this was a strong case for him. I can't imagine that the United States Supreme Court is going to do away with birthright citizenship. The second part of it, actually, according to these legal experts yesterday, he has other cases that are making their way to the Supreme Court that are far stronger as it relates to judicial powers and the ability of a district judge to have a uniform nationwide injunction. There are other cases that are better than this one, according to these legal experts, for Trump to win on that. I think he will ultimately win on that case. I'm not sure if it'll come through this process.
Bill continues to use the word illegals, and I just want to tell a story about who he's talking about. Also in Georgia, over the last week or so, we've learned there was a young woman who was brought here as an infant by her parents, just missed the cutoff for DACA, the Deferred Action Program, and she was stopped because she didn't have a right turn signal on and was found to be undocumented and was sent hundreds of miles away to an ICE detention center. Turns out, in retrospect, police pulled over the wrong car. She did have her turn signal on, but her vehicle matched a different car that was driving unsafe. This is someone who only knows the United States as their home, who speaks English, who got an education and graduated high school and is working. And we are now detaining her for weeks on end because cops got it wrong. So when you say illegals, Bill, that's some of who you're talking about. And I'm sorry, this is not as clear cut as if you are not, you know, here with every documentation and box checked, you got to go, particularly when they're like luring people to immigration meetings and deporting them. This is nonsense. It's an overcorrection.
Bill, I actually have never asked you this question before. Do you know anyone who's undocumented? Like, do you know, have anyone in your life who is?
Not that I know of. No.
Do you think easier for you to like categorize an entire group of people as illegals, which is a kind of a dehumanizing term, because you don't know anyone who has this background?
No, I don't mean it that way, to be dehumanizing. They're not here legally. So by definition, that makes them illegal, correct?
Yeah, but you make it seem like their entire identity is like the illegals. It's just like, it's like the blacks or like any of these like categorical terms that like put a people like,
it
reduces them to one aspect of their humanity.
That needs to get improved. I think all of us agree on that. That process needs to get improved.
Oh, totally. I'm just saying, but like, language matters. Words matter. And I feel like every time you've said it so far on today's show, it is felt like a small cut as far as just reducing people to one aspect of their humanity.
Someone can be undocumented, and that is also an apt description, and perhaps recognizes their humanity.
Whatever words you want to choose, and I don't want people to be dehumanized or hated for what they are or the life they live, but this problem exists because we have not had clear policy on this issue for decades. On both sides of the aisle have screwed this up. So, to make it about one instance that you brought up, or the opposite, where somebody comes into the country illegally and kills somebody, we can all find these examples that make a point. But the problem here is we have not fixed this issue.
And as long as we don't fix this issue, we just say, let's look the other way. Look, it doesn't exist as a problem. It's stupid.
It's also stupid to deport someone to a freaking gulag.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. You
heard me say.
That's one case.
You have heard me say.
Also point out the other cases where people are killed by illegals.
You have heard me say that we need actual immigration reform in this country.
Absolutely.
And what Donald Trump and his administration is doing is more harmful to our broader society and economy and culture than what previous administrations had done.
Over the last decades, we've had Democratic presidents, they've had Congress on their side. We've had Republican presidents, and we still sit here today with nothing on the table. So we can argue about the words all we want. It doesn't accomplish anything.
But let's not pretend that what the Trump administration is doing is fixing the system, because it's not.
I didn't say he was. I'm not a Trump supporter, as you know. Quick break here on Point Taken. I think we got two more segments. We'll get to Grab Bag. We always wind it up at Grab
Bag. We got breaking news from Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
Via Bill McCashin. But now the lamestream media has weighed in. Kristen, I think it's in front of you now.
It is. The clean energy boot. No, this is the wrong one.
Well, let's let Bill tell us.
Bill, you were the one who broke the news to us. So you, what has happened since the show started?
I am the font of all news, Kristen.
Speaking of narcissism.
The Big Beautiful Bill has failed today in the House Budget Committee by a 16-21 vote. I don't know if Joe is. I'm not familiar with House rules as well as I should be. I don't believe that means the bill is dead. This version is definitely dead in the Budget Committee, but I think, you know, with a few tweaks, it could come back. And I'm going to talk about this more in the Grab Bag on my advice for congressional Republicans, because I don't think they have any idea what's coming, the backlash from Republican voters if they do not get this stuff done. But it hit a big snag today. It failed in the House Budget Committee, and we'll see what Speaker Johnson says about that in the next hour, I'd imagine.
That was my question. What does that mean politically for Speaker Johnson?
Well, I'm just going to remind people what my bold prediction for 2025 was, which was that we would have more than one Speaker of the House.
Oh, I know that's where you're going to go.
I don't think, like, this is a big problem getting bigger, not smaller, within the Republican Party. And there is a way to zoom out to 30,000 feet and look at the last 10 years of American politics and believe that Donald Trump is going to be, like, in retrospect, the end of the Republican Party in any recognizable sense to what it has been throughout its history. Because, yes, President Trump won in 2024. I'm not disputing that. I'm not saying he's, like, not winning in the short term. But in the long run, because he has no actual, like, policy views or, like, core values, because everything is so transactional, because of the way he has led the Republican Party, the Republican Party doesn't know what the hell it's for anymore. And so you've got hardline fiscal hawks saying you got to cut. You've got people like Josh Hawley who are like, no, our party needs to be more populist, so we're going to be more pro-union and we're going to oppose cuts to Medicaid. The Republican Party does not have an identity other than, if Trump wants it, we're for it. And that is going to be difficult in the immediate future, as we're seeing with this Budget Committee vote. It's also going to be a long-term problem for the Republican Party.
Bill?
65% of Americans will see a tax increase if they do not extend the 2017 tax cuts. Moreover, working people, I don't know any billionaires who get who work overtime or get tips for what they do. Those two components were wildly popular during the campaign last fall. They are in the Big Beautiful Bill right now. They impact working people like no one else. And if Republicans can't find a way to get those things done sometime on or before the 4th of July, the backlash is going to be fatal for them politically.
And the Penn Wharton Institute just did an analysis of this entire package. And what they're finding is that while the Republican Party is saying we're populist now, this package is going to hit working families the hardest and be far more beneficial to those at the very top, which gets us right back to where Republicans have run into buzzsaws politically in the past.
He's Joseph Becky, Bill McCashin, and Kristen Bryce, Steve Sfidi. I love this text. Text line is, as I like to say, hopping. Love this mix on Friday. So many different and quality opinions. We need more conversations like this. And they also threw in our two-party system sucks. Good stuff.
Agreed.
On the text line.
All right, grab bag when we come back.
Absolutely, grab bag. We'll see what the guys and gals have to talk about. I know what mine is
singular
already.
Gal.
Yeah, gal.
Well,
at least
we
in here.
Jazz.
Yeah, at least in here. All right, quick break.
All right, since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
Let's talk.
All right, let's let Bill go first since he's on the road. Bill, what's your grab bag this Friday?
My grab bag is advice to House Speaker Mike Johnson. Keep them in session. Do not let Republicans go home this weekend. I would turn down the air conditioning, turn up the heat on these guys. Let them hear from their constituents back home what Republicans are not understanding here. All you have to do is look at Wisconsin. On April 1st, Brad Schimmel got 600,000 fewer votes than Donald Trump did in November. Yes, I know the difference between a November general election and a spring election. There's going to be some level of drop off. But for one third of Trump voters to stay home means they didn't see the point. If you think you can vote no on these bills and they don't pass and you can go back to your district and get reelected, good luck. Republicans will stay home. You will get defeated in a primary or in the general. Your choice. You were sent to Washington to do a job. Do your job.
Orders from Bill Mikoshin. Joseph,
I wonder if he dialed that up after the budget committee voted it down, or if that was what it was originally intended to be. Mine's a silly one.
That wasn't going to be my grab.
Asked and answered.
I learned something about myself this week that I'm like kind of amused by and wanted to share. So, you know, you guys know I often wear a backwards baseball cap. I'm maybe not looking at a lot of T-shirts. But as I'm running for state party chair, I've had to kind of go back to, like, grown-up clothes. And so I've been wearing a sport coat that I really like on the coat as part of the rotation. And I was catching up with an old friend this week. I ran her husband's campaign for the U.S. Senate in 2008. And she was telling me her daughter, who I used to carry around when she was a baby, just went to prom. And I was like, I got to find this photo. And the next day it just popped up as 17 years ago, election night, and I've got this baby on my hip, and I'm wearing one of the jackets I'm still wearing on the campaign trail today.
That's
17
impressive.
Years
we
later.
We got to get you shopping.
So,
Josie shopping.
I ask you, Steve Scafidi, what's the oldest sport coat or blazer you have? Bill, you got one?
No, I'll give you this. Good on the weights. Bad on the style and fashion. Good job keeping
Steve
it away.
I probably have multiple sizes from 17 years
no,
ago.
No, I got rid of all my oldest one. I told Joe it's like 2 years old. Oh, my grab bag's quick. My pal, teammate, friend, Kristen Bry, is throwing out the first pitch tomorrow. I will be out there with her somewhere around the mound area. So come on out. It's WTMJ day.
Yeah.
Are you nervous about your big moment?
It's kind of.
They're not going to let you catch?
The competitiveness in me is a little bit like, I gotta not embarrass myself. So I'm literally, after this afternoon, I am an athlete.
You'll be all right.
And so that's why, because I'm an athlete, there's a part of me that's like, if I go up there and embarrass myself in front of thousands of people, I'm gonna
you'll never
live it down.
Not having done it, it's a little daunting, but my advice is just kind of half throw it, because then you're
I'm not trying to throw a strike. I'm just trying to
just
keep it straight and over the face.
I know you said your father-in-law's helping out. We got gloves at our house.
Okay.
We're 5 minutes away. If you need another session, you know, tomorrow morning
like, go warm up the arm.
Let us know. We'll take care of you.
You got a 10-second grab bag?
My grab bag, this is some good news. I mean, it's still high, but the new numbers came out for 2024 from deaths from overdoses, and there was a 27% decrease.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that is...
Amen,
right? And so as far as the why this is important to fund public health, why it's important to fund initiatives that help everybody. And so I hope that the fight to, you know, it wasn't 213 million that because of fentanyl, but it was a huge decrease of how many people died from opioids. And that is a good thing.
That is an awesome thing. Just a couple quick texts before we get to the bottom of the hour news here for you kids. That's 11:30. Thank you, Chris and Brian, for bringing your viewpoints to the program. Sorry you get interrupted so often. Have you listened to the show? We all get interrupted. Texter asked the question that I was going to ask, and I didn't have time. Do Democrats, are they all on the same page? I'm paraphrasing, but they're not either. I mean, this idea that there's one monolithic idea.
Well, that's the two-party system, right? It's like there's both parties end up having to be a big tent. But it does feel like there is a shifting that is happening in both parties as far as like what are the values, what are the policies, and who are we appealing to?
Yeah, so I think we get a little consumed with our party identities sometimes. I think we're all talking about the same things, but we're not. There's even on that very sensitive subject of abortion, you can find pro-lifers and pro-choicers within the same party. So let's not think that it's like a blanket, this is what you are, this is what you are. That's actually a dangerous way to think, and it's not helpful as actually someone who wants to see things actually move forward, other than just constantly throwing barbs and accusations at each other. I think that's my take on all of that stuff.
All right.
How's your campaign going, by the way, since we got 30
seconds?
I think
good. I mean, I just showed you guys the photo.
Yeah, that's a bad look.
I don't know if it was Steve or Bill criticizing that the jacket must be out of style now. Turns out if you hold on to something long enough, it'll come back in style.
That part is true.
That's true. Yeah, that is very true.
Actually, were you a Bell Bottoms guy, Steve?
Oh, I'm sure in the 70s I was.
I was saying, Kendrick Lamar wore some Bell Bottoms at the Super Bowl this year, so you could bring those back.
Yeah, Jean Bell Bottoms, they had dress pants. That was all we wore for, like, I think about 3 or 4 years.
Corduroys.
Yeah,
corduroys were the dress pants.
Does anybody wear corduroy pants anymore? Is that a thing anymore?
I don't think so.
I want to bring those back so they can hear you walking up. All right, gentlemen, have a good weekend. We got local news coming up. Don't forget our podcast was released today, the 9th edition of You Need to Listen. It's a really good one. And yes, Kristen swears in it. Local news with Connie Weber. But before we get to that, the latest from ABC. Oh, it was stormy last night. And this is a great time to talk about one of our partners here at Loyal Family Renovation. So I had hail damage last May. Bad. Our whole neighborhood got wiped out. And people were sending me pictures last night on text. Like by me, very small, pea size. By my buddy Ken's house, my friend Julie's house, like golf ball size.
Ooh.
Which will dent everything. It'll wreck your roof. So, you know, I'm meeting, actually having dinner with Jeff and Jake on Monday, along with Nick, one of our salespeople here. And they can take whatever issue you have. And it's not just like your roof or your cars. Those are the ones that almost seem to be at hit. It's like your gutters or your siding or sometimes your screens, your windows. They'll stop to your house and they'll evaluate everything, like everything you have that could have been impacted. It's not like a one thing. It's like many things, especially for hail like this. And there were some places in our area yesterday that had baseball size.
It was crazy because I was in Madison last night.
Yes.
The storm was wild as far as it just, it almost just like washed over the entire state. But was how long did it last here? In Madison, it was 15 minutes?
Yeah, for like an hour. And various forms. There's hail, there's heavy rain, there was high winds, and then it was gone. Then it was a little bit almost sunny at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened in Madison.
But if you need someone to come out and actually like look at your damage, because I know it's extensive, and like, having gone through that, it's never easy. And especially if you have a roof problem, that can lead to other problems where you have water coming in. Water infiltration is how they call it in the business. But a company that actually will work with you and your adjusters. So I know it's a bit of a commercial, but I love working with Jeff and Jake at Loyal Family Renovations, and they're so good at their jobs. And here's what I loved about them, and I will make this personal, because when we, Kathy and I, met with them, Jake and Jeff and Kathy and I, we sat in our patio, and we actually called our insurance company, and we all talked together through all of this stuff. And they analyzed all the things we had, and they worked through this for months. And then we, of course, got a brand new roof out of it. My roof was pretty badly beat up, as were others in my neighborhood. So if you're looking for somebody who can actually do something about the issues that you, unfortunately, are probably dealing with today, and it's even beyond that, there could be structural damage to your house, because we know there was some severely high winds and probably tornadic behavior in some areas.
Did any trees go down by you?
None that I saw.
I'll show you a commercial. There's a big
by
tree.
By your house?
Yep.
And you're on the River West side of town. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it was a nasty storm. You know, we're used to that here. But Loyal Family Renovation, so that is just my plug for if you want something that's going to get to the bottom of whatever your house is needing to be looked at and to get the work done and to get you resolution, they're really good at what they do. What else should we talk about today? What were you doing yesterday?
So there's two different events. On Wednesday night, this was excellent. So do you
remember Monte Ball?
Yeah. So I remember him playing for the Badgers, obviously like a star running back, and then got drafted for the Broncos.
He was as good as it gets, yeah.
And do you know his story?
Yeah, I know he had some, I think, alcohol and drug issues.
Not drug, just alcohol.
Alcohol.
And, you know, and it was, I don't know if you can write a more prolific bottom, like hitting rock bottom, than what he had. So he watched the Broncos win the Super Bowl from a jail cell in Dane County.
Wow.
And then shortly after that, his son was born, and that was his decision to start getting help. and go into recovery, go into therapy. And so now he's spent the last 9 years being a mental health advocate, working in all different. He's opening recovery high schools in Colorado. He might be opening one in Wisconsin in 2026. So it was a fundraiser for Journey Mental Health Center. But it was like a fireside chat of getting him telling a story. And I listened to a lot of podcasts in preparation of interviewing him. And there was even stuff that came out that he had not talked about before. In fact, the first story, I was like, how do you feel when you come back to Madison? Because like I, growing up there, every time I step back in Madison, there's nostalgia. There's feelings of being grateful that I grew up there. And for him, he's obviously had some of his worst days and some of his best days there. And I didn't know what his answer to that question was going to be, that we opened it up like that. And for the first time that night, he stayed in the same hotel where he had gotten arrested.
Oh, wow.
And like, it was like a step forward for him in therapy to like make that choice to stay there. And like, it was really cool. That was really cool. And then last night, we have a question.
I just love the fact that now he's sort of mended his problems and it's paying it forward.
And I think that's the thing. And that's one of the things I asked him. I was like, you know, you were a high profile guy. This obviously, when you got cut from the Broncos, the embarrassment that came with that, then you get arrested. And, you know, when you have that kind of notoriety, people have, they get bits and pieces of the story. And I was like, what was the decision to not just move on, right? Like now he part of his life's work is retelling that story again and again and again in the pursuit of his story helping other people. And like, he was an unbelievable human being. And like, he's still doing work in Wisconsin, doing a lot of work in Colorado. So it was very cool to be part of that conversation.
And last night you were just partying?
No. That was a different thing. That was Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. They were doing their annual fundraiser formal gathering. It wasn't even that formal, though. It was the People's Gala. So there was more.
Was it a who's who?
Not really.
No?
But it was fun. It was fun. Our friend Dan Schaefer was there with me.
I love Dan. He's a great writer.
And so, but yeah, it was a fun, it was a very, like I said, I love Milwaukee. I love that I live here. It is always nice to spend a little time in Madison, though.
I love Milwaukee, too. I just work here, but I still think it's a great city on a great lake. Not the first person.
I mean,
to say
isn't
that.
Oak Creek also on a great lake?
It is.
Yeah.
It's also a great city. You know, I used to be mayor there once.
Oh, really? I never knew that.
How many texts will we get on that subject, you think, though? And a Packer season ticket holder. Might as well rub both wounds raw. All right.
What was that?
Packer season ticket holder.
Rub both wounds
did you raw.
Just, did you? Is that a saying?
Yes. Look
I've
it up.
Literally never heard that before.
Google that, you know what? She's Chris and I'm Steve. Point taken.
A door slam causes a stir, severe weather strikes the state, birds keep exploding, and more. It's the Week in Review, brought to you by the Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Another country where it's better.
Father of the Madison school shooter is now out on bond. 42-year-old Jeffrey Rupnow faces 3 felony charges, including intentionally providing a dangerous weapon to a minor. His daughter, 15-year-old Natalie Rupnow, used the legally purchased guns in their home in the deadly Abundant Life Christian School shooting last December.
Freddie's 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Got him with a changeup for strikeout number 1,000 in the career of Freddie Peralta.
Gary Day now faces 6 charges in the Eastern District of Arkansas after he was involved in a multi-state Amber Alert for missing teenager Sophia Franklin.
On the second floor of the 2-story home in Fredonia, Ozaukee County Sheriff Christy Knowles says a 37-year-old man was armed to the teeth and making threats towards law enforcement.
We knew he had firearms and there were a lot. There was a lot of firepower in that home.
From the WTMJ Breaking News Center, it's from downtown Milwaukee, the Zeidler Building. Reports of an incident there with a large police presence.
The examination of the area did not show any signs of a weapon being discharged, which is a very, very good thing.
NFC North Division opponents bookend the Packers' schedule. Week 1 at home against the Lions and Week 18 on the road against the Minnesota Vikings.
A federal grand jury indicts Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan, accused of helping an undocumented man evade immigration agents.
We are here today to support not just Judge Hannah, but to support democracy. The eyes of the country and the world are watching very closely this case.
Gina is trying to find a title, a creative title for this podcast. I'm going to suggest Pegging, Knobs, and Double Runs.
So many different meanings if you don't know cribbage. You better be careful what kind of podcast you start.
Uh-oh.
A very good point.
Damning new details that we're releasing today about former President Joe Biden's physical and mental deterioration and how his family members and closest aides concealed it from the public.
to admit that you weren't doing a good enough job as a journalist to dig a little bit deeper during the administration.
Someone's got to tell the story. Someone's going to have to write a book. No journalist is perfect.
All eyes here in Chicago are on Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Fake news.
Are we there yet?
In the East Bay city of Richmond, along Bernhard Avenue, they have a problem. Birds keep exploding. They land on a certain power line and they're immediately electrocuted. Bird carcasses litter the street.
So when they land and it happens, they just quickly explode and it's just really violent.
Decapitated, whole big thing. We had a funeral for a bird.
I'm pretty sure none of that's real.
Lane Grindle, Brewers broadcaster, is with us. All right, Lane, you wear headsets for a living.
Talk about a head of hair.
Yes. Do you ever worry about if you have an event after the game, how your hair is going to look? Do you get headset hair?
Do. I have very thick hair, and it's very straight, so it's a problem for really anything that I do. I have calyx. It's just a mess.
I got gum in my hair.
You do.
This just stinks.
Any one of the thunderstorms has the potential of producing tornadoes. So they also will have the potential to produce very large hail on the order of golf ball size hail or larger.
Thursday night, severe weather in Dodge County included one confirmed tornado at Mayville.
Several police stations will be playing Amazing Grace as a salute to our men and women that wear the uniform.
You know, without Lake Michigan, or even, I suppose, Lake Superior, without the Great Lakes, Wisconsin would be, what do folks say, Iowa.
Oh. New Year. Goodness.
Okay, guys, take care and goodbye.
What a week, huh?
What a week, eh?
What a week.
Shut it down! Oh, let's go!
I would love to be in Milwaukee. I love it here. They call me the mayor here, right? So it's kind of hard to leave a city where you're like, you're the mayor.
Why? What did we do? Suckers.
Fake news.
So when they land and it happens, they just quickly explode.
I put Nocium spray on every evening and it doesn't care. They just, they find me.
And I don't have to see you tomorrow or Sunday. Please don't call me and we'll see how things go on Monday.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
That's the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Oh, we certainly are. WTMJ Day tomorrow at the Brewers Ballpark. We're excited about that. Kristen will be throwing out the first pitch. I'll be there for moral support. I did it, I think, 5 years ago. It's sort of nerve-wracking, but, you know, once you're out there, it's just like...
How'd your pitch go?
It was good.
You get it over the base?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean...
Straight?
I mean, straight is... I'm not a professional pitcher, but it was a good pitch.
All right.
I mean, I did it for a lot of years for like the opener of like high school baseball and Little League. They always invited the mayor, so you get a lot of practice.
You a mayor?
Yes, in Oak Creek. So come on out if you're at the ballpark and say hi. The other thing is, next week is one of my favorite weeks of the year. It's Salute to Service Week. We honor this year 6 people.
Oh, you bumped up 6.
Yeah, because we have co-honorees on. Let me get the day right. Thursday. Representing the Milwaukee Fire Department. Co-honorees, tremendous story. Each day, Chris and I will play a feature. We're going to have live studio guests, of course, the honoree, and some people, some spouses, some co-workers. We have a canine officer this year, which I'm very excited about. I thought I did one previously, and I might have. I have to think about that longer. But it's always going to be the last half hour of the program. Mm-hmm. So Monday and Tuesday, Thursday and Friday, 11:30. We have an early out for Brewers on Wednesday, so that'll be at 11:08, roughly. We'll tell their stories. It's all fun. They're all interesting stories in different ways.
I can't wait.
Some are two life-saving stories, and the other ones are sort of fun. Just fun stories, including an awesome one, a fire department chaplain for like a dozen communities. He's also a pastor. And when we're doing the interview, I'm like, I cannot wait to talk to you in person. He just blew me away in the
interview. Because of his charisma?
He just was, he had it all going on. He was confident. He was funny. He's a storyteller. And his wife nominated him, who was also a co-pastor. So every year it's different stories. I was just very excited about the process.
Yeah.
And we did probably, with all the various pieces, 20 different interviews this week. So poor Jazz and I were like, and then we did some other.
I know,
because
I was gone for, you sat in on a couple of heavy lifting, but yeah, I'm excited to hear the stories, be part of it for the first time.
And as I was talking about earlier, our partners are fantastic at WTMJ, and my partner for most of the years of this have been Waterstone Bank, who are just absolutely tremendous. I've known the last two CEOs there, and they always gave me a strong commitment that they want to be part of this story. It is something that I did right away when I started doing radio. I said, I want to tell the story because I had spent a lot of years doing what I was doing, and I had a close relationship with public safety folks. And their stories weren't being told, at least not the positive stories. So this is sort of my celebration of that reality, that there are some really cool stories that should be told. And we spend a week in May every year this week sort of sharing that information. So I'm excited and geeked out about it. And thanks to producer Jazz for doing all the heavy lifting on this stuff, because that's not easy, trust me. And I've had, three producers who have done this for me over the years. And it's a lot of work on top of all their regular work.
Mm-hmm.
So join us last half hour, all of our next week's programs. Kristen, good luck on your first pitch tomorrow. I will be out
You'll
there.
You'll be there, so.
I'm going to try to... I'm just
imagining you, like, whispering something to get in my head, like, right before I go, just to, like...
Like, tormenting you?
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely, I will do that. I think the roof will be closed, because it's supposed to be a little windy, cooler tomorrow, so, which is a good thing. You don't want to wind-aided, like, going over
at
the
guys. At least I'll have something to blame if it was open. I'm like, yes. The wind!
It's all on you, because it's calm with that roof closed. She's Kristen. I'm Steve. This is Point Taken. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. We had some great shows this week.
We had some great shows. So if you want to go back, just a reminder, if you text POINT to 855-616-1620, we will send you the link to our show page, where you can get the links to the Apple, Spotify, anywhere you get podcasts. So you can review and subscribe and never miss a show.
Yeah. And I actually go back and listen to all the shows. I don't know if you do that, but I do that. And I learn stuff, because to be honest, sometimes I'm not playing close attention. I got other stuff to be doing up here. And
when I'm yapping, when you're yapping away. All those years of learning how to tune it out.
And that's the honesty you're going to get from a guy like
it.
Me.
I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you Monday. Well, maybe we'll see you at the ballpark. Have a great weekend, everybody.